session number 24901, room 5.
Sergeant Brabs, Bureau 5. You were saying that the column commander would be at the head of the...
At the column, yes. Well, and at the head of the, him would be a guard. It would be a section going on in front of him in order to warn him should there be any danger. It didn't matter about the ones at the front. yes, he moved with his column guide. And
what did you do for overnight stops when you were on this march?
You just stopped wherever you were, preferably near a river, so you could get with the water. We continued to march for another 3 weeks over the Pakhir Mountains until we came to the River Chindwin, our first obstacle. Wingert sent us a signal, "Well done, Leicesters, Hannibal eclipsed." The brigadier had chosen a loop in the river as the best place to cross to give some protection from being spotted by Japanese spies. Then the RAF dropped inflatable dinghies with outboard motors and we started to cross. This went on all morning and afternoon until every man, mule and piece of equipment was safely across. Then, after a swim in the river, we resumed our march. The discipline on the march was very strict. It was forbidden to leave even the tiniest piece of letter And that's it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And at that stage of the march, we were being fed on American K rations. These needed no cooking. They were in boxes, and each box contained a complete meal. Breakfast, dinner, tea. If we were able to collect a full drop, everybody got 15 boxes, 3 of each. Some had 4 cigarettes in, and some toilet paper. But we were liberally surprised with English cigarettes. When the drop was over and everything sorted out, we settled down for the night, letting the bonfires go out. Drops by day were only requested in desperate circumstances, as the smoke from the fires could be seen, as well as the actual planes making the drops, and our positions exposed. At night time, the fires were not visible, even at a short distance away. Before we had started off on our operation, we had each had to fill in a card which were addressed to our parents, wives, with an explanation that because we were on special missions, we would not be able to ride home for a few months. And they were told not to worry about us, but still keep writing. Amazingly, we received some of the posts safely, even in the midst of the most difficult situations.
How often did you get a drop then?
Well, I don't know.
Every 5 days or so.
A normal one. Every five days. That would have all the food and all that sort of thing on. But it depends then where you were We were going to this place, Indore, which was a big town in, where is it, Hardy?
Burma.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. And we wanted to capture that. And we're moving in on it.
What happened when you got there?
When we got there, we found out that there were two columns made up from other regiments who were to join us in this manoeuvre, and they never turned up. They got bogged down somewhere or cut off, and it was too big a job for us to do without them, having four lots. So we did as much damage as we could, and then we set off and marched all the way back again.
Did you have any encounters with the Japanese before you got to Indore?
Yes, one or two we did, but not on a big scale. There were ones that either they hadn't known that we were there, or we hadn't known they were there. And or sometimes when we're crossing rivers, you know, we would come across them. But by and large, we got through all right. And then we came back, and we did a few more. We had a sort of the REs had built a sort of a point for us, you know, to go back and forward to, and. They would drop food into it and all that for us. And what happened this particular night? We had to put in. Down the road, they weren't faring very well. This was at this depot which they'd built, and they wanted to know if we could send some reinforcements to them. And so we agreed, and we said that we would come down in the night. And what happened was that we got waylaid by the Japs, and we had to hide ourselves. And then eventually, what happened? We got some of the stuff through to the place, and then he withdrew us and said we'd try again the next morning, and this would be yes, and we were going to put traps on the road to stop any Japs getting up, for to give them time to get the, you know, a breather, get themselves back. So we went and we got this stuff. But what we didn't know was there was a Japanese column coming up the road, and so we all had to get back quickly into our spots on the road. And we had one of these guns, you know, these big guns. And when the first van got level, we opened fire, and there was chaos. They were running all over, and they crashed onto the road at the other side. and then it all went dead. And all you could hear was the screams of the wounded. It was grim. We were on the other side of the road, you see. And so we agreed that we'd have to leave them there in the morning. And that's what we did. We got up and we had fired a few shots with them. And then we made our own way back to where we were going.
What were you doing that time? You commanding your section?
Yeah. Yeah.
How was your section actually deployed?
Well, in normal units, a section, there are three sections in a platoon, and normally, and but when Wingate got his way, he came over and persuaded Winston Churchill that all his great work and all this and the other, and we had four sections in a platoon, and each section had 10 men in it. Whereas the ordinary thing is about seven men. So we had these. And this is why how we came to put the thing on the road. When we set out to lay a trap for for them bringing the supplies up to, it was Mad Mike Candlefoot who was marooned up at the other end. And what they decided was that we would fire on them, you see. We would lay a trap for them.
How was this trap laid out? How was it?
Well, there was nothing much you could do because the road was just a macadam road, but it touched the soil at the side. There was no footpaths or anything like that. You see, it was just edge. So first truck, it was heard coming up the road. I think there was about 10 of them stretched out along our track, you see, but you have to be careful that you weren't firing on your own blokes. And but the first one came up, and they had one of these American things that fire through, modern, I don't know what they call them.
Bazooka.
So like bazookas, yes. And they fired on the first one, and it went squealing, and came off the road at the other side into a great big hollow up there, and all the blokes were squealing and screaming, and the others, when they saw what had happened, they turned round and disappeared. But we had this one all night, and they were screaming and hollering, all night. And then next morning, see, we had to get up and disappear before they... And we had to have a fight. We had a few rounds, exchanged a few rounds with them. And they darted across and tried to get us, and heaven knows what, we lost two or three blokes there, and then we managed to break away and get back to our quarters where the CO was.
When you set the trap up, did you have your men dug in beside the road, or were they just in the open?
No, they were just in the open. There was nothing where you could dig, you see. It was just soil. And it was just covered with a thin layer of trees, you see. You couldn't be seen only at various spots along the line. And
it sounds like that was a successful ambush.
Yes, it was a successful ambush, yes. And, but they thought they were, you know, going to have an easy run up and get their stuff. But but we lost a few blokes coming back, and we had a few silly asses. I had a lad in my section, and when we got safely back behind where we could go, and we were going down. We went back down the path we'd come up in the morning, you see, and then we got to where the two paths met, and I said, well, this way, we go this way, come up there. And this lad was in my section and said, we didn't come this way at all, this is the way, that's the way. I said, don't be silly. What was his name? Burnham or something. I said, don't be silly, do as you're ordered. He said, in this file, he said, this isn't the right way. We're going to get this, that and the other. Well, what could I do? I couldn't do anything. He wouldn't come. He'd run off and took him to him. So when we got all back safely, and I went and reported this to the, company commander. He just wouldn't have it. He said, what could you do in circumstances like that? I said, I couldn't do anything. I said, there's another 9 blokes to be thought of and their safety. And they were all of the opinion that we were on the right track. What am I to do? So I said, oh no, it's not you. I said, you made a good job of it. I said, well, didn't he say why he was? I said, no, he just said, this is the way, and this is the way I'm going. He was a Geordie, which you know what Geordies are like. And I never found him anymore. And I used to get letters, didn't I, from the War Office, even after I'd left the army. Could I give him any more information about this bloke and this, that and the other? Has he come to life? And we kept having to answer these, didn't we? But he never did, so could never understand why he was so. I mean, if I'd have thought it was the other way, and 9 were going this way, I'd go and join them. You would, wouldn't you? You wouldn't think. Well, I'm not sure, but and we could see all the marks, at footmarks of the cut when they came up before, you see. And anyway, I told the. I said, and unfortunately, I said he was carrying a brain gun. So, I wouldn't have mind losing him if we'd have got the bloody got the gun. You see, oh, I said I'm not really as nasty as that, he said. He didn't like him, but he didn't want that to happen to him. But you wonder why people do things like that.
Were there any other incidents on that expedition that you can remember? But what happened after that, then? Did you carry on?
Well, I carried on then, and we went down the way we had come up. Back to where the rest of the column was.
So you rejoined the column.
Rejoined the column, and reported into the column commander, as being in charge of this job we'd done, and I had to tell him, of course, about Brannan or whatever his name was. And well, he said you can't do anything like that. Well, you know, at first he said you didn't mind him going. If we could have got the machine gun. Oh, he said, I won't be as, thick as.
They were mean, what happened? Where did you go from there? Did you go on any more stones?
We went, well, the, what happened was Wingert got killed, and the whole thing, our thing depended solely on him. He was the commander, and so it was decided to dismantle him, and all the people would go back to their old units, you see, which we did. And
how did you get back from the jungle then? Did you walk back by the same
route? Yes, but we walked back by the same way we come down. It's funny that you can tell a track that you've been on if you, you know, if you want to go back. It was about, we'd come back about 200 or 300 miles, but we got back, and then we packed it all in, because
they flew you out, didn't they?
Hmm?
They flew you out, didn't they? Didn't you come out by plane? Back to India.
That was at the end of the whole thing. Yes, they flew us back to India. But where's a funny bloke was a Wingert. There was a with cracked, and so that was that.
When you got back to India, what did you do when you got there?
We got back to India. What did we do? We were still digging pits. We're still digging defences, because eventually we got the airmen to come and we were flown out by air, because there was nothing else we could do. But I think when it was, Wingert had been out. It was only 70 miles across, you see. We were in the jungle there, and 70 miles away was all the ordinary stuff, you see. And he'd been out to give some fresh orders or something, and on the way back, the plane he was in, a two-seater, him and his aide-de-camp, and it crashed into the rocks, and he was killed immediately. Well, once he had got, there was a lot of hostility to this Chindit business, particularly from headquarters, the regular soldiers and the regular thing. He was getting supported by Winston Churchill and all these people who, you know, what a good man we have, how wonderful, and all this, that, and the other. And yes, we'll back him up, and whereas the heads of corps in regular Indian Army soldiers have been there for most of their lives, I think, and they couldn't stand him, you see. So there was a lot of trouble. Nobody wanted to be there to take the position anyway, so they said, oh well, we'll break it all up, and we were flown out then, back to India.
Where did you go to in India?
I don't really, India, it wouldn't be far off from where we set off from
Lido.
Lido, yes. Mm. Lido, yes, that's right, Lido.
What were you doing then when you got back to Lido?
I don't know. I was still I think I got promoted by then. I got was I a sergeant? Yes.
Pardon?
Went on
leave in India.
Ah, that's right. Went on leave, yes. Yes, I went to... yes, all these that had been on this these Chindits, as I say, now that the Wingit was killed, it was all thrown away. And everybody got 6 weeks' leave. In we could either go to... If you've got a map of India, I'll tell you. We went to... Leonard and I went to... no, it was on the other side. And some of them went onto the inward, you know, places that some of the old soldiers that served there and that. But we had a good 6 weeks there. In it was a, you know, it was beautiful beaches and all that sort of thing. You could, there was snake. What's it, bands round, you know, shark bands and all that sort of thing, and it was marvellous. Mm. And we had a lovely digs, you know, those where it was army stuff, and it was very good.
Did you get involved in any more operations after you came back from Burma?
From Burma.
Came back to England, didn't you?
You know
what? Came back to England.
Yes, yes, yes. Back to England. Mm.
Was there anything going on in India while you were back there?
Oh, yes, what's going on? Oh, yes, you see, the Japs were trying to get a foothold. And, of course, there was always a need for soldiers there. I don't know how that finished, unless it was that the Japs surrendered the whole of the Japanese lot surrendered. I'm not sure.
But when did you come back to England?
Came back to England. But Evan, you think you'd know that, wouldn't you? Well, when I came home from India, I went to
Warwickshire.
Warwickshire, yes. And I was taken on as a permanent staff instructor for the rest of my service.
What were you teaching?
Well, the war on the continent was going on, you see, and anybody coming back from there and being injured or something like that, they were given then, before they were sent back, they were given a 6 weeks course to get them back into shape. Same with people coming from India and places like that. When they got here, in order to all events, they would be sent to the continent, you see. And they wouldn't go without having been given another 6 weeks training, see. And this is what we were doing, myself and another two or three chaps. We used to do all the training.
What was in the training? What were you teaching?
Well, rifle drills and all various other things. Night stuff, going out at night and all that sort of stuff. And then that they would have, two sections challenging the other two at night time, and all, you know, it was a typical what you understand. Really, it was to give them 6 weeks before being sent shuffled back. In other words, they could get to see the parents and all that sort of thing. They got 6 weeks leave.